Hello, I'm Curtis Powers, and this is Agenda Weekly. Thank you so much for joining me again this week. I really appreciate it. We've had some meetings in Oklahoma and Missouri this week, and just had a wonderful time meeting many of you and your children and families and things. It's been a great blessing. Thank you so much for coming to our events. Those watching on Rumble, please like and follow. That helps us a lot. Today I'm going to answer some of your questions, but then I'm also going to get into a segment where we dig into the depopulation agenda. It's so important. I was watching some different documentaries this week, and one of them had a section of it that was talking about the history of the eugenics movement from Karl Marx forward, and it's so interesting. I'm going to play some clips of that and then comment on some of the things in there, but it let me know very clearly the reason why the climate environmental movement agenda, the green agenda, is so anti-human and so really about depopulation. It's because it is the eugenics movement, just repackaged for the 21st century, because they knew, because of Hitler and the Holocaust and the communist slaughter of the 20th century, we got to rename this thing and we got to rebrand it so it looks like we're doing something noble. The whole goal of the environmental movement is to eliminate the useful idiots, the human weeds, as they would call them, which are all the poor people of the world. They want to eliminate all the poor people of the world, and where there's just the super rich elite left to rule and reign and pillage the resources and everything. And you can see that's their agenda, but from some of these clips you'll see, oh my goodness, they realize we got to repackage, and they've done that since the 1850s until today. They realize, okay, climate. Back in the 1970s, they literally said, okay, climate is going to be the vehicle for depopulation, but we'll act like we have to, you know, create less food because we're going to destroy the planet. We have to not allow people to industrialize and get electricity because we got to save the planet. So it'll always be the excuse of saving the planet to eliminate all the people that they despise. It's really that wicked. Next week, I'm going to do one on the JFK assassination and why it matters today. And a new book's come out on that, and I'm just researching it now and studying it more. Everyone knows it was fishy, it was whatever, but now we have some concrete facts to show us very clearly that our government was the ones that killed JFK. But we'll talk about some of the reasons why they did that and what has happened since then. But anyway, that'll be next week. But thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate it. I'm thankful for you. And those that are not subscribers, please consider going to agendaweekly.com. And if you subscribe there, it's $5 a month, you get all the different things we provide each week, which is a lot more than just my little video here that I put on Rumble. Anyway, but we try to do this to be a blessing to you all, to save you time figuring out what's going on, so you'll have more time to act and to do something to make a difference. But thank you so much. Several weeks ago, I played a video for you of me speaking at this pastor's conference in St. Simons Island, Georgia. And I was talking on Marxism and communism. Well, we just got the news a day ago that one of the pastors there that my daughter and I had spent time talking to, a sweet black man, his name's AD, he was murdered out in front of his church this week in Miami, Florida. And it appears to be, it was a homeless man who he was helping, who he had allowed to stay at the church because he didn't have a place to stay. And he just got mad at the pastor and just killed him right there. And he died there on the sidewalk at the church. And so would you pray for Pastor AD's family? He has 4 or 5 children, his wife, that church. I'm just encouraging you to do that. That has to be devastating, totally unexpected. He was a young man, sharp. We had so much fun talking to him. It was just like, oh, when they said he's dead, we were just talking to him a few weeks ago. But I would encourage you keeping his children, his wife, his church, and that community in your prayers, that God would really do something great with that. And I know he will. Some of you commented on me putting a Mike Adams video in there. I know half the time he says things that are nonsense, and then half the time he has great things. I won't put on any of his videos anymore. And whenever I put on anyone's videos, and I've said this many times in the past, I probably just need to repeat it, that is not me condoning everything they've ever said or everything they've ever done, because I don't know everything they've said or done. It's just saying they made a good point in this video on something, and I'd like to share it with you. So that's always the case, but I won't put any more of his on there because he on some areas is way off base, but has interesting ideas on others. He said the Lucifer telescope, you know, was the Vatican's and stuff, and that's not accurate. There is a Lucifer telescope. Some of the people said there's no such thing. Yes, there is. They call it Lucy now because there was such a backlash. And it's in the building where the Vatican has its telescope in Arizona, but someone else owns the Lucifer telescope and stuff. So that was not accurate what he said about that. Also, a couple of you said, I shouldn't have been so hard on Mike Johnson. I'm sorry if I came across in a way that was rude or disrespectful or whatever. But I don't apologize for what I said. The Speaker of the House has complete authority. A lot of people, if you haven't been in there, you don't understand how it works. They literally have the power to eliminate any legislation they don't like. They just put it in the drawer and it's done. It will never be heard. That's what Nancy Pelosi did while she was in there. That's why the Speaker position is so vital. If any legislation's coming through there, and it's not good, they can just say, no, we're not even bringing this to the floor for a vote. It's done. I'm putting it in my drawer and it's done. And it dies there. That's the end of it. And so anytime you have a speaker that's supposed to be on your side and something bad happens in Congress, it's always their fault, 100%. They can't make all the good things happen. They can bring them to the floor, but if it doesn't get enough votes, it doesn't get enough votes. That's not always their fault, the good not happening, but it's always their fault when the bad happens, because they could have said, we're not even going to have a hearing on this bill that funds late-term abortions, period. If that's in there, I'm not even bringing it to the floor. And he could do that, and he's not doing that. And he's doing so many other things. He is totally pushing Biden's agenda. So if he's really a Christian or not, I don't know. I know my whole life, so many people have told me they are, and I look at the actions of their life and I go, that's a lie. That is not true. So I don't know. That I don't know. And some of you said, we have friends that know him, or that's great. Politicians are great at telling you what you want to hear. But what he is doing is not right, because he said before he was Speaker of the House, here's the things I would stand for. And he's not doing those things. And that is so concerning. Many of you had questions about ivermectin. And yes, there's places online you can get that now, but it is kind of expensive. And I am not ever offering on here financial advice, legal advice, medical advice, or anything, as you know. Never. I just tell you what I think about things and you can take it or leave it. I use the horse dewormer from Tractor Supply. It's really cheap and I take it all the time, and I think it's very effective for many illnesses and sicknesses and different things, but that's 2 cents for me. You do whatever you want, but that's just what we have done because it's way cheaper than paying $300 for it online or whatever. It costs 4 cents a tablet. I know that. So people are making a lot of profit off of it because they know people want it, but I'm like, I'm not paying that, whatever. I'm going to take the stuff from that's made for animals. But I talked to some medical doctors and they said, it's the same stuff. They just package it for animals. We take it with a spoonful of yogurt, put some of that on there for our weight. It's all based on your weight, and swallow it and it's down and it's fine. And I think it does help with a lot of different things. Also on health recommendations, some of you were asking about that. I wanted to bring up again, Be Your Own Doctor, Part 1 and Part 2. I think it's by Rachel Weaver. Those are excellent books that will be a great blessing to you if you get them and read through them. Just things you can do at home to take care of your illnesses and things, so you don't have to go to the doctor and spend the money and get on all the drugs sometimes that aren't always necessary, but they push them because that's how they make a living, is selling you those drugs. And just a few more of your questions before we get into the depopulation agenda. Danae was asking about is there something I could use instead of Google for email, for backing up my photos and docs and all that? Yes, what I use is protonmail.com. You can get a free email address there, but they also have services you can pay for, storage services and VPN services and things like that. And I've been happy with them. They're out of Switzerland, and it seems to be a good thing to use. You don't want to use Google for sure. If you have a Gmail address, get rid of that. Go to protonmail.com, get one of their free email accounts, and use that. Google says in all the fine print of their stuff, whenever you upload your photos or anything, it becomes their property. That's their stuff. If you have a Google Docs saving all your documents, that means those are their documents now. All your family pictures and videos, they have that in a file on you. And it's just, I don't like that. and they're in cahoots, of course, with big government. The CIA is the one that helped fund and start Google. So you don't want to be part of Google in any way, shape, or form. Stephen, who is from Idaho, said, Curtis, you said while you were a representative in Idaho one time, one of the Republican representatives said, yeah, I'm really a Democrat, but I had to run as a Republican to get elected. And yes, that is a true story, Stephen. It happened, and it was shocking to me, but I knew it was true because I knew most of them that was the case, because we had an 85% majority of Republicans in the House and the Senate, and you couldn't get a Republican piece of legislation through there, which means probably 35-40% of the Republicans weren't really Republicans. They were Democrats, but they realized Idaho's a Republican state, so I got to run as a Republican to get elected. So that's what they do. It's very deceptive and wicked, because by them running, you're assuming they agree with all the planks of the platform, but they didn't, and they were fighting them every turn, and it's still going on today. And I was a representative for one term in 2007 and 2008 of District 10. He asked that question there. Then Dr. Joel says, I bought the Freedom Fighter pack so that I could distribute the movies to friends. I'm presently reading the three books. I knew a number of the facts of pervasive communist efforts, but did not to the extent documented in the books. I was intrigued with the use of the format of the Sgt. Pepper's album format to You Can Still Trust the Communist. I recognized a number of the faces, and I was wondering if there was a map showing the names of each of the faces like they had for Sgt. Pepper. Anyway, yes, Dr. Joel, it is, here's the book right here, people, so you can see it. Dr. Noble designed this, and it came up with, like their album cover, but all the people that have been instrumental in completely destroying our country. And it's really powerful, but right inside the book, you must have missed it, on the very first page, it has that. And I'll show you some of these. Look at those pictures on the screen right now. Number one there is Pablo Picasso. A lot of people don't know this, but he, of course, was a famous artist, and his art was just this craziness of nonsense, most of it, especially in his latter years. But he was a member of the Communist Party, a loyalist to it his whole life. So he was doing his part to break down the cultural, break down the standards of what art, what is beauty, what is, you know, something to be admire and not to admire. So he's making these crazy, just nonsense things. That was all part of their agenda. It was some of the actual communist goals from the 1950s to make sure art is ugly, repulsive, and meaningless. That's word for word from the communist goals. It's amazing. Then if you look, number two, there was William Z. Foster. He was one of the leaders of the Communist Party USA and wrote the book Towards Soviet America that kind of laid out the blueprint how to turn America into the Soviet Union. So many of these people, even Woody Guthrie, he was an American folk singer and songwriter, but he wrote a column for the Communist Party paper, The Daily Worker. So he was doing his part through the music to tear down, to promote revolutionary ideas, rebellious ideas, so the young people would turn against tradition, turn against their parents and families, leave the church, and come out and join the Marxist Revolution. So many of them. Roger Baldwin there you see. He was, of course, a communist who advocated for the abolition of all private property, and he was the one that founded the ACLU. And so these people, it's pretty amazing. Number nine, Bill Ayers, members of the Students for Democratic Society, well known for his militant activism. He co-founded the Weather Underground, and he is a small C communist. So that's what he said when asked, are you a communist? He goes, I'm a small C communist. The Weather Underground, over an 18-month period, in 1971 and barely going into 72, and I've told you this before, but it needs to be remembered, and you can find this in Time magazine, they blew up in America 2,500 buildings in 18 months. That's five a day in America for 18 months. That's when they had hoped to get the revolution going, and they couldn't because too many people still believed in God. Anyway, there's a lot of other ones on there, Antonio Gramsci and George Bernard Shaw. Oh, number 15 there, take a look at number 15. That's Armin Hammer. And he was an American tycoon, but had such close ties to the Soviet Union. And many think he was a KGB agent. That was never totally proven, but he had total connections. Every time the communists would come to America, they stayed with him and they were with him. And two of the people he mentored, a lot of people don't know this. One was Al Gore. He was really good friends with the Gore family. And another one was Joseph Biden. Both of those two men were encouraged to get into politics by Armin Hammer, who, again, many even think was a communist spy, but he definitely loved the Soviet Union and was supportive of them and tied to them in a million different ways. But anyway, the list goes on and on there. But that was a good question. First page of the book, you probably just flipped over it, but it's a really interesting picture to take a look at. This is from Dwayne and Donna. We've lived in Tampa Bay for over 40 years and are good friends with Sharon Buck. And it's interesting, this is fun because she was in my sixth grade Sunday school class back then. Her dad, Dave Buck, just celebrated his 95th birthday. That's neat to me. Dave Buck was the man at my church that I went to for the first 22 years of my life who led the music. Beautiful hymns and just honoring music to the Lord. And he was just a neat man up there. As boys always like, he had this great hair just combed back, and he always looked sharp in his suit and everything. He was a wonderful man. I cannot believe he's still alive at 95. That was Christ Community Church in Tampa. And I'm tied to that because I was the very first baby there. I was 6 or 7 days old when they had their first service. My dad was one of the elders. It was just a group of a few men with Dr. Williams, who was our pastor. And then it slowly grew over those 22 years to be 400, 500, 600 people. And it was just a healthy, great place to grow up. But I have so many memories of that. And it makes me, when I think of Dave Buck, Mr. Buck, to me, I miss that music. The words that are so powerful, that are so meaningful, that talk so purposefully about our Savior, that aren't these just repetitious kind of lines that almost don't mean anything in so many of the current praise songs. I'm in churches sometimes and I go, what are they doing? It's like these songs, you're not even sure what it's talking about, as opposed to, you know, great is thy faithfulness, O God, my Father, there is no shadow of turning in thee. I mean, just the old hymns that are just so powerful. But Dave Buck gave me a love for those hymns, and I want to thank him for that. And those, Dwayne and Donna, if you're still in contact, if you would tell him, Curtis Bowers, the little boy that was in the church growing up there, remembers him and is grateful for him. I still love those hymns. I've tried to teach them to my children, and he is going to have an exciting reunion in heaven when he sees all the people he influenced. Okay, now I'm going to go on and play a few clips of this documentary. It's from 2007. It's called Endgame, and I've blacked out some parts of it because the images are just too graphic. In case you're watching with your children or something, there's stuff like no one really needs to see that. It's disturbing, so I'm going to black out those places like that. But listen to this, because the Bible says in Ephesians 6, we are in a spiritual battle against wickedness. We think, oh no, they're just naive, ignorant people. No, it's wickedness. And that's why they do the things they've done. That's why the 20th century was hundreds of millions of people being slaughtered by their own governments. Why? Because man is wicked and he's rotten to the core. But watch this clip, because it helps you see clearly that humans are the enemy, which shows it's satanic. He hates us because we're made in the image of God. But then I'll come in and talk about several of these different clips. But watch this.
Depopulation should be the highest priority of foreign policy towards the Third World. Henry Kissinger, 1974.
There's a need for a new world order, but it has different characteristics in different parts of the world. Now, none of this may succeed this time, but this to me is sort of the outline by which someday, in the next few years, a solution will emerge.
Where does this mindset come from? Why do the elites kill the largest masses of people when no one is resisting them, when they've already attained total control? What ideology drives the elite psychopath? Since Plato's time, 2,400 years ago, state planners have openly proclaimed their desire to control every detail of the commoner's life. From breeding programs to mass extermination of undesirables, the dark dream has continued on for millennia. The scientific rationale for tyranny has always been attractive to elites because it creates a convenient excuse for treating their fellow man as lower than animals. Robert Thomas Malthus, famous for saying that a mass food collapse would be helpful because it would wipe out the poor. His fictional scenario would later be called a Malthusian catastrophe. Malthus is important because his ideas led to the rise of a new scientific field that would dominate the course of human history for the next 200 plus years. Charles Darwin, an admirer of the Malthusian catastrophe model, developed the theory of evolution, its chief tenet being the survival of the fittest. With the help of T.H. Huxley, known as Darwin's bulldog for his strong support of Darwin's theories, Darwin's theories were pushed into wide acceptance among key scientific circles throughout England and then the world. Darwin's cousin, Francis Galton, credited as the father of eugenics, saw an opportunity to advance mankind by taking the reins of Darwin's evolution theory and applied social principles to develop social Darwinism. The families Darwin, Galton, Huxley, and Wedgwood were so obsessed with their new social design theory that they pledged their families would only breed with each other. They falsely predicted that within only a few generations, they would produce supermen. The emerging pseudoscience was only codifying the practice of inbreeding, already popular within elites for millennia. The Four Families experiment was a disaster. Within only two generations of inbreeding, close to 90% of their offspring either died at birth or were seriously mentally or physically handicapped. The moneyed class of the planet, and particularly the royal families of the world, who were already obsessed with breeding and filled with a predatory disdain for the underclass, seized on the new science and began aggressively enforcing its aims worldwide. Biometrics appears to be a new science, but it was actually developed by Galton back in the 1870s as a way to track racial traits and genetic histories, and as a way to decide who would be licensed to breed. In 1904, the Cold Springs Harbor Research Facility was started in the United States by eugenicist Charles Davenport with the funding of prominent robber barons Carnegie, Rockefeller, and Harriman. In 1907, the first sterilization laws were passed in the United States. Citizens with mild deformities or low test scores on their report cards were arrested and forcibly sterilized.
You're 17, aren't you, Alice?
Yes, but what have you done with my folks?
Well, we're trying to help them, Alice, and you too. They were taken to the hospital this afternoon.
Hospital? Wasn't none of them sick this morning?
We thought it necessary to present your family's case to the State Medical Commission. After an examination, they decided there was but one important action to take. To have your entire family sterilized.
Why, what's that? I don't know what you're talking about.
Now, in this state, we have a law which provides for such people to have an operation so there won't be any more children.
I see.
Now, we've placed your brothers in institutions where they'll be properly cared for. You can go back to your job soon. I'll arrange to have it held open for you.
But I'm keeping my job. I'm not going anywhere.
Now, you're going to the hospital too, Alice.
And you mean they're going to stop me from having children ever?
Exactly.
I'm all right, I tell you. I won't go to any hospital.
We don't want any trouble with you, young woman. If you refuse to go, the officer here will take you by force.
In 1910, the U.S. Eugenics Record Office was set up. By then, the British had created the first network of social workers, expressly to serve as spies and enforcers of the eugenics race cult that was rapidly taking control of Western society. The social workers would decide who would have their children taken away, who would be sterilized, and in some cases, who would be quietly murdered. In 1911, the Rockefeller family exports eugenics to Germany by bankrolling the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute, which later would form a central pillar in the Third Reich. At the 1912 International Eugenics Conference in London, eugenics becomes an international craze and gains superstar status. The futurist and best-selling sci-fi author H.G. Wells had studied biology under top eugenicist and was spreading the new faith worldwide. In 1916, H.G. Wells' lover, Margaret Sanger, starts her promotion of eugenics in the United States. In 1923, Sanger receives massive funding from the Rockefeller family. Sanger wrote to fellow eugenicist Clarence J. Gamble that black leaders would need to be recruited to act as front men in sterilization programs directed against black communities. In 1924, Hitler pens Mein Kampf, or My Struggle, and credits U.S. eugenicists as his inspiration. Hitler even wrote a fan letter to American eugenicist and conservationist Madison Grant, calling his race-based book, The Passing of the Great Race, his Bible. Hitler developed the plan for mass extermination of the Jews and what he called other sub-races, as well as the handicapped, from Grant. By 1927, eugenics hit the mainstream. The so-called science was aggressively pushed through contests at schools, churches, and at state fairs. Churches competed in contests with big cash prizes to see who could best implement eugenics into their sermons. Major denominations then tell Americans that Jesus is for eugenics. That same year in the United States, more than 25 states passed forced sterilization laws, and the Supreme Court ruled in favor of brutal sterilization policies. When Hitler came to power in 1933, one of his first acts was to pass national eugenics laws, modeled after laws in the United States. The 1934 film Tomorrow's Children brought the eugenics agenda to the silver screen in the United States.
In the case of Miss Mason, I can see no reason for the operation that's been recommended. The girl is perfectly normal. She's hardworking and has a good reputation.
Do you know anything about her family background?
Oh, yes, Your Honor, I do.
There are several other children, aren't there?
Yes.
What is their condition?
One is a cripple. Two others might be classed as feeble-minded.
Isn't the oldest son in jail?
Well, yes, I believe so.
And knowing all that, you still contend that this girl should be allowed to bring more people like that into the world?
She's sound, Your Honor. She's not anything like the rest. Surely she should be given a chance to work out her own salvation.
I can't agree with you, Doctor. Suppose she is normal. The chances are that her children will inherit the family taint. Isn't that possible?
But, Your Honor, I'm
sorry, Doctor. Three generations of unfit are enough. Petition not allowed.
By 1936, Germany had become the world leader in eugenics for taking effective actions to sterilize and euthanize hundreds of thousands of victims. The big three of American eugenics, Davenport, Laughlin, and Goethe, were dispatched by the Rockefellers to Germany, where they advised the Nazis on the fine-tuning of their extermination system. With the strong support of the U.S. and England, Germany had gone over the edge, and tens of millions would pay with their lives. At the end of the war, the Allies protected from prosecution the very Nazi scientist that had tortured thousands of people to death. The Nazi brand of eugenics had embarrassed the elites, but they had no intention of stopping their plans. The Allies literally fought with each other over who would get top Nazi eugenicist. It didn't matter if the SS doctors had tortured tens of thousands to death. They were free to go. The Angel of Death, Joseph Mengele, and his boss, Otmar von Werscher, were not prosecuted, and von Werscher even continued his work in Germany after the war. Eugenicists were angry that their great work had been exposed. They then scrambled to camouflage their agenda. Eugenics Quarterly became Social Biology. The American Birth Control League became Planned Parenthood. New terms like transhumanism, population control, sustainability, conservation, and environmentalism replaced racial hygiene and social Darwinism. Many eugenicists of the previous period engaged in what they called crypto-eugenics. Purposefully taking their eugenics beliefs underground, they became highly respected anthropologists, biologists, and geneticists in the post-war world. The Allies then smuggled thousands of Nazi scientists out of Germany and placed them in key scientific positions, ranging from bioweapons to rocketry throughout the military-industrial complex. The founder of IBM was a devout follower of Hitler. Thomas J. Watson had supplied his punch card computers and IBM technicians to the Nazis for use in the death camps. Tattoos on camp victims were IBM human identification numbers, which fed into the computers. IBM had used similar punch card systems as early as 1928 in a Jamaican race mixing study. The first real computers were literally invented by a eugenicist for eugenics. UN chieftain and unrepentant eugenicist Julian Huxley argued that since the leaders of eugenics had founded the environmental and conservation movements, that they should be used as vehicles in the formation of a world government. Just as H.G. Wells had envisioned, this government would be controlled by a scientific dictatorship and would be guided by the principles of eugenics. Huxley created the World Wildlife Fund with Bilderberg founder and former SS officer Prince Bernhard of the Netherlands and Prince Philip of England.
In the event that I am reincarnated, I would like to return as a deadly virus in order to contribute something to solve overpopulation. Prince Philip, reported by Deutsche Press Agentur, DPA, August 1988.
Aldous Huxley, author of Brave New World and brother of Julian Huxley, gave a speech at Berkeley in 1962, shortly before his death. He admitted that his best-selling book, Brave New World, written in 1932, was based not on fiction, but on what the elite were actually planning to implement.
And here I would like briefly to compare the parable of Brave New World with another parable which was put forth more recently in George Orwell's book 1984. I'm inclined to think that the scientific dictatorships of the future, and I think there are going to be scientific dictatorships in many parts of the world, will be probably a good deal nearer to the Brave New World pattern than to the 1984 pattern. They will be a good deal nearer, not because of any humanitarian qualms in the scientific dictators, but simply because the Brave New World pattern is probably a good deal more efficient than the other. That if you can get people to consent to the state of affairs in which they are living, the state of servitude, the state of being. Well, it seems to me that the nature of the ultimate revolution with which we are now faced is precisely this, that we are in process of developing a whole series of techniques which will enable the controlling oligarchy, who have always existed and presumably always will exist, to get people actually to love their servitude. People can be made to enjoy a state of affairs which, by any decent standard, they ought not to enjoy. And these methods, I think, are a real refinement on the older methods of terror, because they combine methods of terror with methods of acceptance. But then there are various other methods which one can think of. There is, for example, the pharmacological method. This was one of the things I talked about in Brave New World. The result would be that, you can imagine a euphoric which would make people thoroughly happy even in the most abominable circumstances. I mean, these things are possible.
The elite have left a massive wave of destruction behind them as they cold-bloodedly experiment on civilian populations as if we are lab rats. A string of congressional investigations has uncovered more than 20,000 secret tests that were carried out against the American people between 1910 and 2000. One well-known eugenic study, the Tuskegee Syphilis Project, killed hundreds of blacks and spanned 40 years until whistleblowers exposed it in 1972. From 1943 until present, the British have tested lethal nerve gas on their own personnel, on land, air, and sea. Many died instantly. Still others died grueling deaths over several years. The federal government commissioned secret radiation experiments on thousands of non-consenting patients. Hundreds of hospitals in the U.S. injected healthy men, women, and children with uranium and plutonium at dosage levels ranging from non-therapeutic to lethal, killing many of the test subjects. Pregnant wives of GIs were given vitamins by base doctors that actually consisted of highly radioactive uranium-239 and plutonium-241, resulting in violent miscarriages and the death of the mothers. Soldiers, sailors, and Marines were used as guinea pigs in hundreds of atomic and hydrogen bomb tests. Patriotic Americans were radiated side by side with lab animals. Pilots were forced to repeatedly fly through mushroom clouds of DNA-destroying radiation. From 1951 to 1961, the U.S. Army paid Israel's health ministry 3 million lira to conduct radiation testing on Sephardic children that immigrated to Israel. The government-run public schools would tell the children that they were going to get a medical checkup and that they were receiving an X-ray. The Pentagon had already radiated more than 4,000 institutionalized children in the United States, many of which had died. More than 110,000 of the darker-skinned Jews were given 35,000 times the maximum dose of X-rays to the head repeatedly. Many of the children died within months. All of them lost their hair. Some still live today and endure excruciating health problems. The covert testing of chemical, biological, and radiological agents on unsuspecting populations continues worldwide today. From 1940 to 1979, the vast majority of the British population was sprayed by aircraft more than 2,000 times with deadly chemicals and microorganisms without ever being told. In 1968, the Pentagon tested a deadly bioweapon on New York subways and placed personnel in local hospitals to monitor the effects. Aggressive sterilization of men and women continued in many states until the mid-1980s. The United States and England are currently testing pesticides and highly toxic experimental drugs on tens of thousands of healthy foster children, many of which die as a result of the experiments. Prisons across the nation have forced inmates to participate in grisly experiments, ranging from pesticide studies to having tablets of dioxin sewn into their backs.
Gradually, by selective breeding, the congenital differences between rulers and ruled will increase until they become almost different species. A revolt of the plebs would become as unthinkable as an organized insurrection of sheep against the practice of eating mutton. Bertrand Russell.
H.G. Wells, Aldous Huxley, Bertrand Russell, and hundreds of other eugenicists constantly bragged about how the establishment believed themselves to be a separate, more advanced species than the common man. Top eugenicists were bold enough to admit that their real goal was not improving the heredity of the commoner, but to further dumb them down so that they could be more manageable. Nobel Prize winner Russell wrote at length about how vaccinations filled with mercury and other brain-damaging compounds would induce partial chemical lobotomies and develop a servile zombie population.
Diet, injections, and injunctions will combine from a very early age to produce the sort of character and the sort of beliefs that the authorities consider desirable, and any serious criticism of the powers that be will become psychologically impossible. Bertrand Russell.
That quote to me is so powerful. That was over 100 years ago when they said diet, injections, and injunctions will combine from a very early age to produce the sort of character and the sort of beliefs that the authorities consider desirable. I mean, think about that. That is unbelievable. So back then, the diet. Why do we have such processed nonsense food? Because they knew, no, key diet is part of that. If you don't give enough nutrients to the brain to develop, why are the baby formulas almost toxic when you study those? I did that a couple years ago. I'm like, the stuff in there is horrible for children. Why? They want them dumbed down. Tucker had a man on a few weeks ago that was talking about that, how the spike protein dumbs down your brain. And they knew that back in 2007, and there was a paper written on the spike protein from SARS-CoV-1, and it made the brain submissive. It destroyed the creativity in the brain. And so then they worked for years modifying it into SARS-CoV-2 and this bioweapon to be more effective at that. So if you've even had COVID, you remember when you had it, many people had this effect. Your brain was just foggy. You couldn't think. I had that for several months. I was like, I had a hard time even thinking. It's like my mind wasn't working right. My wife had that for about a year afterward. That was the spike protein. So even if you didn't get the shot, you got the spike protein that was engineered inside the COVID virus, and it affected your brain. Thankfully, it seems to eventually get out of there, but that was all purposeful. In the processed diets and everything, it was all purposeful. I think what's important to understand is nothing has changed since Margaret Sanger and Hitler and Darwin. Eugenics is still the name of the game. It's just disguised itself as other things. As climate, the transgender movement. Of course they love that. You're eliminating your ability to ever reproduce. The homosexual movement, that's why they love abortion, sterilization, pharmaceutical medications that drop your ability to reproduce and your fertility down to zero. That's all part of this. And you go, oh, it makes sense. They were working at it adamantly 100 plus years ago. Did they go away? Did they just disappear? No. They realize, okay, we got to be more clever here in how we package this. Watch this clip.
Over 100 years ago, eugenicist social planners said that they'd use mind-altering drugs to control the population. By 2007, more than 20% of the U.S. population were on some type of prescription antidepressant. But in the case of foster children, a sector where the state has total control, at least two-thirds are forced to take a cocktail made up of, on average, 7 psychotropic drugs. Chairman of the Texas Society of Psychiatric Physicians, Joe Burkett, testified before the State House Select Committee hearing on psychotropic drugs in foster care and shocked the public when he said that 2/3 of foster children in Texas had been placed on psychiatric drugs because they were very, very sick from a bad gene pool.
A lot of these kids come from bad gene pools. They don't have stable parents making good decisions. Besides the gene pools, they've then been traumatized by abuse, neglect, and problems, and then they've been traumatized by separation, and all those things predispose to mental illness.
The Western world is now implementing eugenics pre-crime policies. Fetuses are now being pre-screened according to family histories of crime. From Portland, Oregon to London, England, Child Protective Services are enrolling newborn children into criminal databases at birth and forcing them to attend probation hearings at age 2. The overlords of scientific dictatorship are ruthlessly prosecuting a war on our most defenseless. In December of 1974, the U.S. government made third world population reduction a central national security issue. The operation plan titled National Security Study Memorandum 200 was simply a regurgitation of the British Commission on Population created by King George VI of England in 1944, which openly stated that populous third world nations posed a threat to the international elite's monopoly of global power. The Kissinger-authored U.S. plan targeted 13 key countries where massive population reduction was called for. Kissinger recommended that IMF and World Bank loans be given on condition that nations initiate aggressive population control programs, such as sterilization. Kissinger also recommended that food be used as a weapon, and that instigating wars was also a helpful tool in reducing population. In 1972, the Nixon White House also implemented a eugenics policy, which was directed by George Herbert Walker Bush, then United States Ambassador to the United Nations. Bush advised China on the formulation of their one-child policy and directed the federal government to forcibly sterilize more than 40% of Native American women on reservations. The Bilderberg-dominated Club of Rome advocated environmentalism as the best front to implement population reduction. Western populations would accept serfdom if it was packaged as saving the earth. In 1998, Ted Turner pledged to give more than $1 billion to the United Nations to be spent in the implementation of population reduction policies planet-wide. In 1999, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation gave $2.2 billion to Planned Parenthood, the United Nations Population Fund, and other population reduction groups. By 2007, the Gates had given more than $30 billion, almost exclusively, to population control groups. The controlled corporate press cynically reported that the Gates were giving the money to help third world children.
A lot of people don't even know this to begin with, but Gates' father was the head of Planned Parenthood back when they were openly eugenicists, openly saying, we've got to get rid of black people because they're human weeds. And that's who he came from. That's who raised him and gave him the ideas he had. And again, he just had a clever approach. I'm going to use vaccines and medicines to eliminate these people. Maybe we can't get them all into the abortion clinic, but we'll give them shots to make them healthy, wink, wink, and we will stop their ability to reproduce, which he has done all over Africa and India, and it's been proven in court. That's why India won't even allow any of his groups into India anymore, because they realize he was experimenting on all their children. The vaccines, the fundings, the donations, they're all about one thing: eliminating humans that are less desirable from off the earth. And less desirable in whose eyes? Their eyes. That's what this is. This is satanic. But we can't be naive to the agenda because it's behind all the wars, the biolabs, the medicines, the vaccines, the marching orders of this is what you need to do with your life, stay inside. It's all about the same thing. It's the number one goal, as I've told you many, many times. If you read all the books and articles from those on the left over the last 100 years, the main goal you would take away is they want to depopulate the earth down to 500 million people or less. And you realize, yes, that is true. Watch this clip.
Bill and Melinda Gates were dethroned as the world's most generous philanthropists when their friend and fellow population reduction enthusiast, Warren Buffett, gave $37 billion to fund an army of population control groups.
And I actually think the world will be much better when there's only 10 or 20% of us left, Dr. Eric Pianka.
Prominent University of Texas biologist Dr. Eric Pianka, while receiving an award from the Texas Academy of Science, said that the worldwide AIDS pandemic was, quote, no good, it's too slow, and went on to laud the virtues of Ebola because it would kill 90% of the world population quickly. When his statements erupted into a national controversy, his graduate students defended him, stating that Pianka was too conservative and that all humans should be killed. But most frightening was the fact that in a crowd of over 1,000 prominent scientists, local newspapers reported that 95% of those in attendance gave Pianka sustained standing ovations every time he extolled the virtues of mass-culling microbes and man's destruction.
The elites, the leftists, were giving that man, that crazy psychopath, a standing ovation every time he mentioned anything in reference to eliminating humans, all humans, from off the earth. You don't think this is satanic? This documentary, too, was made in 2007. So it's gotten so much worse than this. But these elites are Satan's disciples. That's why they're doing this. He has given them the fame and fortune. That's why they're the elites. And the Bible tells us, if you're not into the Bible and haven't read it, the Bible tells us Satan has the power to give wealth and fame to anyone that he wants. And for whatever reason, that's the way it works. That's all he has to offer people. And from the context of biblical principles and morality and everything, those are the two least valuable things that exist. But he can give that to those people, and that's what he's done. And that's why they're on a suicide mission and don't know it, because he has blinded them to be working toward an agenda to destroy their own children and grandchildren, to destroy the planet they're living on by all these environmental policies that are really hurting the earth instead of helping it, and on it goes. It's incredible, but I think it's encouraging, because if we can show people, hey, this whole climate nonsense, not only is it a lie, CO2 is wonderful, we need more of it on the earth for the plants so they'll really explode with growth and life and everything, But the reason they're doing this is it's all part of the eugenics movement to eliminate minorities and the poor from off the earth. We might be able to pull some people over where they go, oh my goodness, that is what this is. It's just an anti-human agenda for totalitarian control, but it's for slaughter and death. And we need to expose that to people. And watch this clip and we'll wrap things up.
China was able to turn the corner and become the leading world superpower because they have a police state and they are able to force people to stop reproducing. Dr. Eric R. Pianka.
The eugenics movement has now shaken off much of its Nazi baggage and is using people's legitimate concern about the environment as a cloak to conceal their real agenda. Everyone wants to breathe clean air and have good water. But the controllers of the environmental movement have done nothing but co-opt people's concerns and parlay it into support for global policies that further destabilize the third world and create untold misery. The corporate elite of the planet intensified their push for a global taxation system with a year-long buildup to the live Earth hysteria held on July 7, 2007, on seven continents. World leaders announced that saving the Earth was the new organizing principle for humanity and hailed it as the planet's new religion.
Now the environmental movement is the eugenics movement, just repackaged. That's what it is. When you refer to it, go, oh, the eugenics movement, the green eugenics movement, that's what it is. And of course, the communists were behind it. And the elites always propped up the communists. Why? Because they're great at slaughtering people and controlling people. So it's to eliminate the poor, to stop productivity, so it creates dependence because we don't have enough food, we don't have enough energy, we don't have enough of anything. And then it's to force us to submit as slaves to whatever they want us to do. So what do we need to do? Don't ever trust the government. They will always be lying to manipulate you to feel afraid and helpless. So you will blindly just do as you are told. Just know that in your mind. So you're always going to dispel the lies whenever they say them to others to protect your neighbor and love on them. And then we need to build up family, the thing they're trying to destroy. You young people, you need to get married, have lots of children, and you need to train them up as warriors for the truth, warriors for Jesus. You need to homeschool. Get the kids out of the schools. They are designed to perfectly destroy their heart, mind, and soul, and to cause them to be crusaders for this eugenics movement. That's the whole point, is to teach the children to hate human beings because they're destroying the planet. And so then anything that causes suffering and pain and death to human beings is good. That's what they're teaching them. And we need to say, no, you're not teaching that to our kids. We need to start businesses that solve problems, be entrepreneurial in what we do so we're not dependent on their jobs and their system. We need to continue to influence others, educate and motivate, lead, don't follow, and just say no to all the lies the culture and the government is telling you. We have to just stand. I think it's a good time. I think as more evidence and information comes out where our side's not just awake, but is informed and understands what's going on, and then shares that with others, God could do something great with that. Just remember, it takes so few, usually just one, for God to step in and make a difference. The Israelites were backed up against the Red Sea. Millions of Israelites, all scared to death. We don't know what to do. One man, Moses, said, God, we need your help. And God said, okay, walk over to the edge and lift up your staff. And he obeyed, and the sea parted. And they walked through, and not only were they taken to safety, but then when their enemies tried to pursue them, he allowed the water to close back on them and wipe them out once and for all. That's one man that was pleasing to God and had the faith to believe God can save us. Another quick story. The little boy with his loaves and fishes, which is one of my favorite. There's 5,000 men with their wives and their children at a gathering, and they need something to eat. And the disciples go, there's no way we could afford to even buy them food, even if food was around here, and it's not. But one little boy came up and said, you could have my lunch to help feed them. And when God saw the faith of that child, he said, okay, tell everyone to sit down. Let's bless the food and eat. And 15 plus thousand people ate till they were stuffed from one little boy's lunch, and there was 12 baskets of food left over. Don't be discouraged. Be faithful. Be trusting. Be doing what God would have you to do. Gideon, up against the army, I think it was 186,000 people, and he has a group of about 30,000. God said, that's too many. And finally, as you know the story, he gets down where he just has 300 men, and God says, that's all you need. Just 300 against 186,000? Yeah, that's all you need. Why was it all you need? Because he goes, I'm with you. If you have more men than that, you'll think you won because of your own strength. God puts us in these positions all the time so that we will know there's no hope. I can't do anything. I'm not capable of turning this around. And that's where we're sitting right now. But as a Christian, the more we look at that, we go, oh, he always puts his children in that position when he wants them to say to him, we need you to show up. We need you to save us. And we know you can, and we are trying to be clean before you and holy and pleasing to you, so you will. And then he says, okay, and he does what he can do. I think part of what's happened over the last 4 or 5 years are as a result of him answering our prayers. I think Trump getting elected the first time when we didn't know who this guy was or whatever, and then allowing us to see the deep state crawl out from behind the shadows because they had to attack him because he wasn't going to just do what he was told to do like every other president does. And then we saw that and woke so many people up. He started labeling the news as, oh, fake news. And tens of millions of people were freed from the lies of the media. They know now. Yeah, it is fake news. He was right. It's all lies, everything they say. And it really is. Every single broadcast, it's all lies. It's all slightly twisted so that you will see the world the way they want you to see it instead of the way it actually is. So, so important. But just be encouraged. I think, you know, the COVID experience also is another wake-up call where millions awakened from their slumber. Millions had adverse reactions from the shots. Realized, hey, they told me to take this and it was safe. And so it's God's doing something. So be faithful and have faith in him that he is going to finish what he has started here. And just one day at a time, do what he's put us on this earth to do. But I appreciate you so much. Thank you for joining me today. And until next week, God bless you.